James.
Yeah, Kate.
This week looked a little different for me watching the football game.
Sure did, buddy.
Yeah, being in the stands, maybe. Them playing Renegade. Let's go.
You know you're going to have to go every week now.
I have to. Committed.
Welcome to the Steelers by the Lake podcast. My name is James, joined once again by my co-host, Cody. Cody, how are you this fine Victory Monday?
I am doing fantastic. I'm fantastic, but I'm not going to lie. I definitely thought you were going to say Victory Mondo.
Oh, don't you worry. We're going to be talking about our boy Henry Mondo today. What a game from him.
Phenomenal game for him. Phenomenal game all around. Listen, I want to start this off. I know we got to talk all the Steelers news, but first, obviously, we got the dub. Everyone knows
most
that
importantly.
By now. Most importantly, got the dub. I did have a buddy of mine message me.
Yeah.
He's a Panthers fan.
What's his name?
His name's Kyle. Repine.
Hi, Kyle.
Great guy. Love him to death. But he messaged me, and I told him, you know, I can't do stuff tonight. Or talking to a group of guys, I'm like, I can't do anything tonight. I got to go record my podcast. Like, oh, yeah, Steelers podcast. And he messages me and says, ha, 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 ha. This week on Steelers by the Lake, is Ben still geriatric after that win? This is what he texted me. And, you know what? No, Ben is not still geriatric.
It's a valid question that some of us have been trying to refute so far this season.
Listen, I haven't been one of them. I've been on the train of Ben's.
Some of us have been shoveling in shovelfuls of dirt on him already.
I don't know what else to say. It is what it is. It is what it is.
You know, it doesn't mean he's not going to have more bad games in the future, but it's a nice trajectory after that game.
Oh, yeah, for sure, especially after, you know, he got injured in the Packers game.
Yeah.
We didn't, you know, going straight into the Steelers news, Big Ben was injured after the Packers game. He had an injured hip.
Yeah, you could actually see an extra pad underneath his pants. You could see it poking through there, the little pattern in his hip pad there.
The hip side, right?
They kept on zooming in on it on the TV. You didn't get to see this.
No.
There's a lot of Ben butt.
Oh, today? On
during
Sunday?
The game,
okay.
Yeah,
I
during the game,
that.
It was a TV full of Ben butt on a regular basis looking at this hip pad.
Big Ben booty.
Yeah.
The triple B's are back.
It's no small booty, I'll tell you that. That's for sure.
Awkward. Okay, moving on. Steelers also put in a waiver claim for Khalil Davis. If you recognize the last name Davis, that is well correct. The twin brother of Carlos Davis, who is currently a Pittsburgh Steeler.
Yeah, yeah. Also plays the defensive tackle position. Both of them were drafted the same exact year, except for Khalil Davis, when I want to say about a round and a half higher than Carlos did. Ran a faster 40-yard dash, did more bench reps. Had a better college career as far as production and numbers.
They played at the same school, though.
Yeah.
They took turns.
Both played in Nebraska. It seems like Khalil took a few more turns than Carlos.
Probably. Probably. For sure.
But it kind of gives you a little insight as to what they were looking at going into the game with the injuries piling up at the defensive line position. The opportunity to attempt to bring in a guy like that, they had to take their shot.
Yeah.
Didn't work, but... you know what? If for some reason the Colts end up waving him and trying to move him down to their practice squad, I expect Pittsburgh to once again put another waiver claim in on him.
100%. Because the Colts, I'm assuming he was protected by the Colts this week. I'm not sure. But Steelers did protect this week. Taco Charlton, Carl Joseph, Cody White, and Chaz Green were all the protected players on the practice squad. And then you also saw them go out and sign Eli Ankor, Ankou. Defensive tackle, 6'3", 325 to the practice squad.
Yeah, now Eli's been in the league for 5 years, been on a few different teams, including the Cleveland Browns. So he's been around a little bit, but a defensive tackle nonetheless, which kind of goes right in line with what we were looking at there with the attempted signing of Khalil Davis, that's for sure. Anthony McFarland came back to practice on Wednesday.
That he did, and that starts the 21-day period. Again, we've talked about this with a couple other guys. 21 days now to get him activated to the updated to the active roster. Otherwise, he is done for the year.
Yeah, yeah. So
we don't want to see that.
Hopefully, he's close. Stephon Tuitt also seen in the building by Chris Wormley. Seems like he still has a knee brace on, but is getting a little practice going.
Well, that's good. Not official practice, of course, because then that would start his 21-day return as well, but hasn't quite gotten to that. Before the game for Sunday, you saw the list of players that were ruled out. So not the inactives, but James Washington, Cam Sutton, Rashard Coward, and Carlos Davis all were ruled out. Rashad Coward would later be released, but we'll get to that in a second.
The other guys ended up on the inactive list. So you had James Washington, Cam Sutton, and Carlos Davis, as you mentioned, all ended up on that inactive list. We also had Akilah Witherspoon, Dwayne Haskins, and Buddy Johnson all on the inactive list, which was weird because Cody White got promoted to the 53, right? Yep. So, like, not allowed to elevate him anymore. He's out of elevations. You can't sneak him back to the practice squad anymore. So they straight up just promoted him, which went hand in hand with the James Washington injury. You needed another wide receiver out there. They released Rashad Coward to make room for him. And then Carl Joseph, the safety, former first-round pick, I believe, elevated to the 53-man roster. So that's his first promotion, elevation, whatever you want to call it, for the season. So very weird that Akilah Witherspoon, who they traded a fifth-round pick for, did not get a helmet in the game, but Carl Joseph does get a helmet in the game.
Again, unless they're trying to do something for compensatory picks, I don't know what makes sense out of not giving Witherspoon a helmet. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess he's not practicing well. That's the only thing that makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Because otherwise you look at it and you say he's got to give you more of a possibility than Justin Lane or somebody out there. But yeah, I mean, the limited play that we did see him in this year, he got toasted deep. So maybe they're just worried about putting him back out there and getting him burned again.
Maybe they are. But that does it for the pregame news. Now we're going right into the game.
Yeah.
It's 1 o'clock game. I was in the Berg.
You were, man. Started early.
Oh, I was.
8 o'clock?
Listen, it was homecoming for my college. I was out until about 2, and then I went to bed, and then I got up at 5:30 and drove to Pittsburgh, picked up my cousin who lives in Gibsonia, drove to the stadium, got some nice park. We were the last cash car in one of the lots that has a lot of tailgating in it. We tailgated. We met some cool people. Had a bunch of just cool people that we just ran into, took shots with, ate some of their food. We gave them some veggie straws. I felt very underprepared. Listen, the people to our right had about 20 pounds of liquor and some really good, like, hot sausages and burgers and stuff. The people on our left had it some, like, I don't even know
what it
was.
Brisket, man.
It was a brisket that they slow cooked the day before.
They smoked the brisket.
And
all this,
and they had snacks and everything.
I love it.
My cousin and I were sitting there with our chairs, a cooler with Yingling, and some veggie straws. Legit, that was it.
Listen.
So next week when I go with my buddy Noah, I'm packing some stuff. I'm going hard next week.
America's oldest brewery, Pennsylvania-made Yangling, man.
We had some leftovers, too. We didn't even get through them.
Well, that's good. You wouldn't have made it to work if you drank all of them.
I drank a lot, but we didn't drink through all of them. But we'll have to see how next week goes. Excited for next week. I'll be at the game again for Sunday Night Football, and then I will not be at work on Monday. I already took off.
I'm surprised, honestly, that you guys didn't plow through all the veggie straws.
No, I left them. I was trying to remember what happened to them, and I left. I sneakily set them on the table of the other people, and I was like, there you go.
There's your donation. Thanks for the brisket, though, buddy.
It was a great time. But again, if you guys haven't been to Heinz Field, you need to go. You need to experience what it's like to watch the game there. Don't get me wrong, the seats are better at home. I will not lie. If we're watching the game, the seats are better at home. But the atmosphere of being in the stadium and being a part of that, and when they play Renegade, it's phenomenal experience, hands down.
Very cool, very cool. And I got to say, Cody, you and that crowd did their part because this is the first time all year I have seen the opposing team be forced to take a timeout early in the game because they couldn't communicate.
Yep.
They couldn't hear each other trying to get the signals back and forth. Had to call a timeout early in the first quarter because of how loud that crowd was.
I think the crowd was louder during that moment than the win.
Yeah.
As weird as that is, I think you're right. Like it was, I remember that, and I was like, I told my buddy, because it was his first time, my cousin, I should say, it was his first time going in a long time since he was young. And I was like, that's what it's about. Like, we can make an impact in this
game. That's it, man. So, that's what home field advantage is all about. Oh, but you got to have fans passionate enough to make a difference.
Yeah, and fans that can learn that, you know, when Ben's making the signal of being quiet, that you be quiet.
Yeah.
Because 90% of those people don't understand what that means.
Yeah.
Either that or they do, and the alcohol's just not allowing them to process it.
They just don't care. They think he's washed, so they're trying to boo him anyway.
Oh, man. They booed. I can't remember who they booed. They booed somebody. Oh, they booed Eric Ebron at one point. I remember that. Ew, I wasn't even part of the problem in that one, but they did boo him.
Well, Ebron had a better game than he was having at the beginning of the year.
100%.
We'll give him that. But first topic is always the quarterback, right? We've been hard on him. He's had some rough games. He's had a tough time making good decisions and throwing the ball down the field when it's necessary to convert on third down and fourth down. And it was a whole different story, you know. A completion percentage was still not amazing, but they kept on completing deep balls over and over. On third down, they were thrown past the sticks, even if it was only a couple yards.
That was what shocked me the most was the play calling, and I was very, very satisfied with watching it, that I wasn't seeing little dump downs behind the line of scrimmage or to the line of scrimmage on third and medium to third and long. I mean, sometimes we got backed up to a second and long or a second and medium, we were still taking chunks out of the distance, and I loved seeing
that. I remember a second and 17
that's what it was.
Where they got 14 yards and turned it into third.
It was Najee over the middle.
Yeah, turned it into third and three, which is very manageable. A few times over the course of this year, I know I've said this in previous games, but a lot of it to me was not play calling. It was just Ben being addicted to dumping it off to Najee Harris. And I get it. Najee's a really, really talented guy. But when it's third down or fourth down, you've got to throw it to one of the receivers that's at or beyond the sticks.
And if that's Najee, that's okay.
Yeah, but it never is because he's the dump off. He's the security blanket when you have no one else. He's never supposed to be the first option unless it's an actual, like, running back screen.
Yeah.
Like, when he's got 14 catches in a game and none of them are running back screens, they're not doing it right. So, it was really nice to see Ben spreading the ball around. Really nice to see the offense go right down the field on the first drive. 50-yard touchdown pass from Ben to Deontay. It's almost like an instant replay of the week before.
Yep.
You love to see it. You know, Deontay putting a good performance together once again. And I didn't see any lapses in effort this week either. Deontay's definitely corrected any of those issues.
At least so far, yeah. And here's the thing. You talk about Najee having 14 receptions last week.
A couple weeks back.
Excuse me. That's one less catch than Ben had completions this week.
Pretty incredible.
That's wild. Like, and Ben obviously had more yards throwing the ball in those 15 than the 14 to Najee because he's throwing the ball down the field, man. 253 yards.
Yeah.
Two touchdowns, zero interceptions.
That's the big thing to me is the zero interceptions, man.
Now, he still had a turnover. He still had the lost fumble, sack fumble.
Yeah.
But our offensive line only let him get sacked once. Against a decent defense.
And let's talk about Von Miller, man. We talked about before the game, we were worried about Von Miller. He's a heck of a pass rusher.
He didn't get to him once.
I think he did once. I think he was in on that sack.
Really?
He was in there on that play. I don't know that he was the one that got it, but he was in there for it. But other than that, he really didn't make much of an impact in this game. And we got to give credit to Chukwuma Okorafor and Dan Moore. They really did a good job
100%.
Of neutralizing.
That was the only impact he had on the game, though. Chooks got called for false start twice because he's trying to make sure he's staying out in front.
Yeah,
I went back and watched the replay of the game because obviously it's different than seeing at the stadium.
Yeah.
Chooks got away with a couple other false starts.
Man, his timing was perfect. I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know
what you're talking about.
They were pretty bad. I think I saw like 3.
It just got worse and worse, and eventually they had to call them.
I think I saw 3 that weren't called,
but
and I'll be
what?
Honest about that.
We've gone against other teams that were doing the same thing.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
So I didn't feel bad about Chooks getting away with a few
of them. No, not at all. But again, Ben with a QBR of 120.9, best QBR, I think, this season, except for maybe week one, maybe. I don't know. But phenomenal play from him. Najee Harris going to the running game now, 23 carries, 122 yards, phenomenal play from him. And I credit a lot of that to our offensive line. Our offensive line did exactly what we talked about last week, and they held some blocks together. They made some holes. They did it. And Najee found the holes and broke through.
Yeah.
Or made the first guy miss. If there was a guy in the backfield, I remember once, I think it was a long second down or a third down, he ran and got a first down and made the first guy look like a fool, just juking him out. And that's what we're excited to see him and talking about seeing with Najee.
And I remember reading earlier in the week before the game that Najee was planning on watching some film with Jerome Bettis. Jerome had gotten a hold of him. And it's almost as if Jerome was just like, hey, man, you don't have to run everybody over. Sometimes it pays off to be a little bit patient behind that line, wait for a second, let things develop.
Yep.
And then pick your hole and go, you know, and almost being a little bit more patient, Le'Veon Bell style of running, but just more physical, more powerful, yep. and maybe even more explosive than Le'Veon ever was, too. But I was really, really impressed with Najee, and a lot of it, too, is you got to give credit, like you said, to that offensive line. Did a great job. The last couple weeks, we've started seeing double teams that are effective. We've seen guys, you know, you don't have to bully the guy in front of you. You don't have to drive him back 5 yards. What you do have to do is create an alley, right? So sometimes what you do is you turn your body. You turn your body, and now he has to go through you. If he can't go through you, you've created an alley without even really driving the man off the line.
Without even technically winning your matchup.
Yeah, you just got to neutralize him. And I saw a lot of that in this game, of people just winning the positioning battles, forcing that defender to now make a really difficult play to get through you. And then next thing you know, Najee's running and getting some nice yards.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even Benny Snell, you know, 5 carries for 20 yards, that four yards per carry average was phenomenal.
Yeah, best game Benny's had in that regard. I mean, yeah. I think he had another dropped pass. He's definitely not a receiver. Oh,
that was the booing. That was the booing, because it was wide open.
Yeah, that makes sense.
No, I remember that. You said that, and I remember seeing it.
Yeah, they got to stop throwing the ball to the running backs not named
Harris.
Yeah, that's really it. And maybe things will change when McFarland comes back. Maybe Anthony can catch the ball, but it doesn't seem like that's a good idea for Kalen Ballage or Benny Snell.
No, Kalen Ballage shouldn't be running the ball, barely.
Kalen Ballage, this was definitely his worst game. One run in particular, I noticed him running to the right-hand side. We had a one-on-one with Zach Gentry blocking Von Miller, right? This was the end of the line of scrimmage.
Yep.
They were the last two guys. Gentry did exactly what we were just talking about, sealing the edge, turned his back to the middle. So all Kalen Ballage had to do was run between him and the tackle. There was a nice big alley right there. He opened it up. Instead of doing that, he bounced it outside, and by bouncing it outside, gave Von Miller all the room in the world to tackle him as easily as can be. You just got to be able to read your blockers. And it doesn't seem like Kalen is very good at doing that, unfortunately.
No, which is weird, because he looked really good in preseason. Yeah. And I don't think it was even because he was just going up against backups. I think he looked like a running back. Like,
yeah,
like
looked
a
more
solid
confident.
Running back.
Yeah.
So maybe that'll change in the future. Maybe we won't even see him again in the future. Who knows? But again, all that matters is that we had an effective running game this game. And it showed.
The best one we've had all season long. The best one probably
since
in 2 years, maybe.
Yeah, easily. It could easily be in 2 years.
I'm sure Connor had a couple games last year that were pretty good. But this was a dominant performance by Najee. And just something that we sorely, sorely needed.
Yeah.
I did see a stat in that game that the other running back for Denver was actually leading all rookies in rushing yards previous to that game.
Yeah. Oh, he didn't get much.
He ain't anymore, I'll tell you that. Now, I don't know that Najee is for sure, but Najee definitely flew right on by him, because he wasn't very far behind.
Wasn't very far, and Pittsburgh also didn't allow many rushing yards. There was one big run that he had, I think, for a touchdown. But other than that, Williams ran for only 61.
Yeah, and one of those runs was 49 yards.
And that
so,
was that was probably
other than
or, excuse
that,
me, he
they
got tackled at like the 2 or the 1 yard line.
Yeah, by James Pierre. We're going to talk about that.
We'll get there. One thing at a time,
we're
James.
We're going to talk
one
about
thing.
I don't want to forget that.
That's
man.
Fair. That's
we
fair.
We got to talk about James Pierre not giving up on that
But
play.
We got to talk about wide receivers now.
All right, I'm with it.
Chase Claypool.
Let's go, Chase.
Again, being at the game, you're not consistently seeing the stats for these players. I remember seeing something online that says, like, look at the highlights of Chase Claypool's 130-yard game. I was like, well, 130 yards? Where did these yards come from? I was so confused. Like, I know that he had a good game, but you just don't. And the field looks so different from when you're sitting there in the stadiums. And I was fairly high up, but I got a good view of the field. It doesn't look like he ran for 130 yards. So very, very exciting for him. Obviously, the one touchdown on 3rd and 10, I was really worried, because that was right after we made the field goal, and then they got the penalty. We got a free first down, and then we went – 2 plays with nothing, and I was like, I'd hate to just sit here and go three and quote unquote out and just kick a field goal again. And then Ben made the nice pass into almost beautiful. Triple coverage.
Yeah, beautiful pass. Really pushed it in there.
Yeah, to Chase Claypool. So that was really cool. And Chase Claypool's long, obviously, being the 59-yarder.
And that was with Chase out of the slot in that play, yeah. which he does not normally play. But with the injury to Juju Smith-Schuster in this game, you had to start getting a little more creative with other guys lining up in the slot. Chase did get to see some slot in his higher explosion and speed out of the slot. That might be a real advantage, man. I'm excited to see if he gets a little more snaps out of the slot.
I don't think we have a receiver right now that can't play in the slot. Genuinely. I think our top three could be outside or inside receivers. It doesn't matter. Between, not including Juju, because Juju's obviously out, but like Deontay, Chase Claypool, and even James Washington. I think those guys can literally play anywhere. So super excited about that. But yeah, Claypool getting that time in the slot was great.
And let's touch base real quickly on Juju Smith-Schuster. Really unfortunate. He got two plays in the game. Both of them were jet sweeps. Pittsburgh executed the jet sweep flawlessly in this game. And it's all about timing. You have to snap the ball before the wide receiver passes the quarterback so that there still is a threat of the running back or the ball being handed to the wide receiver. Otherwise, the jet sweep is a wasted motion. So they did it twice. It was effective for some positive yards. Unfortunately, on the second one that Juju got, he took a really hard hit by the safety, Kareem Jackson. There was nothing dirty about the hit. It just was perfectly placed, unfortunately. Injured his shoulder pretty badly. At this stage, what we know is that there is a dislocated shoulder. There is fear that there could be worse injuries going on there as far as possible ligament damage.
And assuming there is, considering they said he has to get surgery, you typically don't get surgery for a dislocated elbow.
Well, shoulder.
Shoulder. You typically, I mean, almost any dislocation, you typically don't get surgery unless there's ligament damage.
Yeah. And I feel like it's almost tough to avoid ligament damage when something gets completely dislocated, you know? That's the problem.
Which is why I'm confused that my high school knee injury that was a complete dislocation, they just said there was no ligament damage. Yeah. I think they're full of crap.
Yeah.
But that's beside the point.
Yeah. Hey, believe me, misdiagnosis of knee injuries, we can talk about that all day.
Yeah.
I was told I had a sprained MCL and I had a completely severed ACL. So, yeah, they definitely don't always get that right. That's for sure.
But sad for
Juju.
Yeah,
sad, and you hope that this isn't the end of Juju's career in Pittsburgh. But unfortunately for him, he did not have a great year going on yet. His only touchdown of the year was actually, I think it went down as a rushing touchdown.
He did.
So yep. Tough to see. You know, this was really the prove-it year for Juju. So you almost feel like he's probably going to have to take a one-year deal again this offseason for either Pittsburgh or whomever he may sign with. I will still hope that he signs again with Pittsburgh.
Agreed.
But I don't see him getting top dollar now because he never got a chance to put up the numbers to prove that he's worth it. Let's all cross our fingers, hope for best case scenario. Maybe he can come back late in the season or maybe even in the playoffs if we're fortunate enough to see Pittsburgh make a playoff push.
Yeah, absolutely. Moving on to the other receivers, though. Deontay Johnson, two catches.
What a stat line, bro!
Two catches, 72 yards, one touchdown. What more do you want? Deontay said, let me show you how to drop this microphone, and that's basically what he did.
Yeah, man, he caught that touchdown pass on the first drive, and I'm betting they paid a lot of attention to him after that, and that's probably he didn't have very many catches.
And I don't care, because he opened up the field for other people.
Yeah, that's fine. If that means that Chase can get five catches for 130 yards, I'm cool with him double-teaming Deontay.
Yep, 100%.
Here's the coolest thing. Here's the coolest thing for this game, in my opinion.
What's that?
Pittsburgh dressed three tight ends. All three tight ends caught a ball.
Again, didn't they last week too? I feel like they did.
Did Ebron?
I think, yeah.
Okay.
Ebron had at least one or two last week.
Well, then it's two weeks in a row.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
It's starting to become a thing, and I'm really more and more impressed each week with Zach Gentry's involvement in the offense. This week they run a tight end screen to him.
13 yards.
He actually juked somebody out and then went and got 13 yards in the first down. And that's
hard to do when you're over like 6'9". I'm sorry, he's not that tall, but you know what I mean.
Eight.
Yeah, he's big.
He's 6'8", 265, and he's not the most nimble guy in the world, but he looked every bit the part in that play.
Yep.
And he's looking every bit the part in the blocking scheme too, which they're really using him a lot in. Again, I know I talked about it last week, but I'm optimistic for the future of this kid now. I know you only have one more year on him past this year on his rookie deal, but you might end up thinking about keeping him around after this year.
Yeah.
Speaking of guys you're going to keep around, that's definitely Pat Freiermuth, right?
Yeah. Two targets, two catches, 100%, baby.
Both first downs.
Yeah.
Both
only seven yards, but yeah. Both first downs.
You know what? He got everything they needed. He got everything they needed. Nothing more, nothing less.
Nope. And I'll tell you what, that stadium went nuts with the Muse when he scored.
I love to hear it. It was so great to hear it, man. Hope to hear that for years and years to come. Eric Ebron had a decent game again. Two catches, 10 yards.
Yeah.
He's catching
the ball.
I'm
not impressed yet. I'm not impressed yet.
I don't think you're going to be, but he's at least catching the ball.
No, I would be impressed with catching the ball, but I just got to see it more consistently. This was one game.
Two in a row.
No. I don't count last game. I wasn't there.
It's a streak now.
It's fair.
He's on a roll.
Is he better?
No, but let's trade him.
Hopefully he gets better. You know what I'm saying?
I think you might be able to get a fourth-round pick for him this week.
Maybe.
Let's go.
We'll see.
Trade him immediately.
Kevin Rader, your time.
Let's go. Call him up.
Yeah, Ray McLeod, one catch, 10 yards, and then that was about it for the receiving core.
But before we go off of Ray, we got to talk about maybe the biggest hit in the entire game, and it was by Ray McLeod. Now, we've been talking the last couple weeks about having your quarterbacks back when you can't catch a ball. Go out there, turn into the defender, right? Ben threw a pass and got batted up in the air by a defensive lineman and a big old defensive tackle, easily 330-pound dude.
Yep. Hands in the air, ready to catch it.
Goes flying towards the ball. He's trying to intercept it, and here comes little Ray McLeod, 185 pounds of him at the most, and just lays him out, hits him with everything he's got, forces it to be an incomplete pass. Which is all you can ask for in that situation, yep. You know. Just amazing job by Ray to just sacrifice his body to go light up a guy.
100%.
And make sure that it's an incomplete, not an interception.
100%. The only thing I will say is that that is the second best defensive play by a wide receiver this year.
Are we going to talk about Hunter Renfrow?
I don't want to talk about it. I just want to make sure we know it's second best.
Yeah,
Hunter
Renfrow's
play was massively
that was insane.
Better.
Yeah.
I won't even tell you what it was. If you haven't seen it yet, Hunter Renfrow.
Look it up.
Look it up for their Las Vegas Raiders.
Fake punt.
Fake punt against, I don't remember who it was. I don't care. Well, doesn't matter.
The Raiders were the team it was against.
Correct, but they were playing somebody. Raiders and somebody.
That's true.
I don't remember who. I don't care. Whatever. Moving on.
Those boys got played by Hunter Renfrow.
They did. Moving on to the offensive line.
Cody White.
You want to talk about Cody White?
I want to talk about his block, man.
Okay, that's,
I know
that's
he dropped
fine.
The ball.
That's fine.
Cody got a little bit of playing time, probably more so due to the Juju injury and the fact that James
Correct.
Washington was already out.
Correct.
But in one play, he went in the jet sweep motion, where you see the wide receiver moving before the snap of the ball across. And they snapped it, and the run play was up the middle, and he came up like a fullback, hit a safety in the hole, and just straight up pancaked him. And that goes a long way with your running back. It goes a long way with your head coach. It goes a long way with everybody. So I love the effort out of the kid. And generally, he has shown reliable hands previous to this game. He only got one ball thrown to him, did not catch it, should have caught it.
It goes a long way with your quarterback, too, because your quarterback's saying, hey, I'm not just here to catch balls. I'm also here to help the team win any way that I can.
Yeah, that's everything. You know, just like what Ray did, you got to have that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Blocking and breaking up possible interceptions.
Yep.
Makes a big difference. Keeps that momentum going.
Offensive lineman. I'm going to be short with this one.
All right.
Just because I don't think there's much to talk about. Chooks had the two false starts. Wasn't great. Other than that, that's the best play we've seen for the offensive lineman thus far. I hope to see it continue. That's all I have to say. That's
I'm going to compound on it slightly that I think Chooks had his best game of the year. I'm not even mad at him about the false starts, to be honest with you, because he basically neutralized one of the best edge rushers in the game in Von Miller. And the rest of the guys did really well. You know, I didn't see any massive breakdowns in communication. They picked up the stunts. Dan Moore had a real nice game at left tackle. And the interior three did a good job. They weren't getting pressure right up the middle either. Yep. So great job in the run game. Great job in pass protection. Just real nice to see overall. Move over to the defensive side of the ball.
Defensive side of the ball. Here's what I will say. The thing that I was the most impressed with
was Cam Hayward's pass breakups.
No, but I'm happy he's doing that again. I think there was a game he didn't.
Last week, yeah, you're upset.
Yeah, yeah.
You called him out. You said he was a bum.
I did. You're right. It was the fact that we didn't have our safeties leading the team in tackles.
That's a nice change.
That made me happy. Granted, let me clarify. Minka did have five. He technically led the team. And all five were solo, but it didn't, or excuse me, James Pierre led the team in six, but Minka had five. And it wasn't because they were getting tackles from players that were beating them down, beating the front seven downfield. It was because they were coming up and making hits on plays that were kept in front of them. And that was nice to see. That's where I have to start. And we normally start with defensive line. Let's start with the secondary. Those safeties, I'm happy that they weren't getting all those tackles from players or plays getting past them or past the front seven.
Yeah, you have to say that they kind of kept most of the plays in front of them. The corners, I think, had a rough game for the most part until the end.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Hayden didn't really stick out too much in film, although he did get one pass breakup.
That was a great pass breakup.
Yeah.
Against Tim Patrick, who's much larger than him.
Yeah, a big boy. That's a big boy. In the corner of the end zone, it's basically a jump ball, and yep. Joe Hayden wins it. Which, fantastic. Other than that, he kind of seemed like he was a step or two behind most of the day. James Pierre, I felt, was very similar. A step or two late most of the day until the final drive.
Till the final play.
Literally the final drive. He did have a pass breakup before the final play. But could have easily had an interception on it. And then the very final play of the game, they go after Pierre again. And why wouldn't you go after Pierre again? Except he's ready this time.
He ran the route for the receiver.
Yep.
Love seeing that.
And he picked it off in the end zone and sealed the game for Pittsburgh. Fantastic for the young man for his confidence. Can only help him in the future.
Yeah. I got it on video. I recorded that play
for
my seat. I'm going to put it on Instagram later. Steelers by the Lake Instagram. Look for it. I'm going to post it.
You should.
I will.
You won't.
Bet. I'm going to post it with a couple pictures, too, maybe. Who knows? I don't know what I'm going to do.
You better.
I might post a feet pic. I don't know. Just kidding.
Why would you even do that?
I don't know.
It's just weird,
maybe,
man.
We'll get some new followers for it. I don't know.
Oh, I doubt it.
My feet are gorgeous. Just kidding. Okay. Moving on. I know, we got weird for a second.
Linebackers. Let's go linebackers.
Linebackers. Melvin Ingram.
Yes.
Played decent. I mean, he wasn't a liability, again.
No, he got didn't have a crazy stat line. Though.
Yeah. They applied some pressure. T.J. Watt, no sack this game. Sad to see, but three solo tackles, one of them coming behind the line of scrimmage. He was supposed to get it was on a run play. He was supposed to get hit by, the fullback or tight end in motion.
Yeah, yo, laid that tight end.
And straight missed him, basically.
Yeah, but T.J., as usual, just an absolute stalwart against the run. Didn't get to the quarterback, like you mentioned. Alex Highsmith is off to kind of a slow start to the year, and you got to wonder if maybe the groin injury at the beginning of the year is still nagging him a little bit. Hopefully he can heal up a little bit during the bye week coming up here in 2 weeks.
Yep.
Maybe get back to full strength. You got to wonder if that's slowing up both of those guys. You know, a groin injury is a tough thing when you're trying to bend that edge and you got a 330-pound guy trying to push you, and that's a lot of stress on
that. Well, yeah, because then we found out that Devin Bush also wound up leaving this game with a groin injury. Devin Bush, however, having the one sack that wound up a loss of 12 yards was a phenomenal play on his part. That's two sacks for him on the year already.
Yep, right. Game after game, man.
That's great.
Two games in a row. If he's not careful, man, he's going to end up in the team lead.
Good.
I mean, TJ's the only one out in front of him right now, I think.
Yeah.
So, and real nice effort there by Devin Bush. Hopefully his groin injury is a minor one, and we'll see him back soon. I got to rewind because I was talking about earlier about how I was going to talk about something that I forgot about it.
That's okay. Bring it up.
James Pierre. So we talked That's about fair. His past breakups.
We did.
And then we forgot to mention the play where the Broncos running back busted off a long run, and there's two guys. There's only two guys that can catch him, Joe Hayden and James Pierre.
Yep.
And it's obvious that James Pierre is a hair faster than Joe Hayden at this stage in their careers. And he tracked him down, jumped on his back, and dragged him down to like the 2 yard line.
And he even kind of went for the ball. He made sure he wrapped up, but he made sure his hand was also in the position that, hey, if I'm lucky, the ball can come out too. Great, great job on Pierre's tackling ability.
Yeah, never gave up. And this is a strong running back who's good at carrying defenders for extra yards. And Pittsburgh was able to hold him to a field goal on that drive, too.
Then that was the Devin Bush sack.
Yeah, that was huge. It was an absolutely huge play. So, got to give James Pierre credit for that. Not only just the pass breakups at the end of the game, but running down the defender and saving 4 points for Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Defensive line.
Well, hang on. You passed it. Robert Spillane.
Okay.
Robert Spillane came in and played.
He did play. He played a lot in the dime defense.
Which was weird.
Yeah, but I think it was mostly because of Devin Bush being hurt, to be honest.
That's fair. That's fair. That's all I want to say. He played.
Yeah. You know, he didn't
I just don't want to forget about him. He wasn't a liability by any means.
Joe Schoberton also ran. He did have a pass breakup, so that's what we got him for, right?
Oh, yeah, I forgot about Joe. Whatever. Yeah. You got to do something, Joe. I'm not convinced on you yet.
Four tackles and a pass breakup. He at least competed in the game.
That's fair.
Defensive line, we saw Joe Boy, Cam Hayward.
I thought for a second you were going to go with Mondell, but you didn't.
Not yet. I'm saving the best for last.
That's fair.
Cam Hayward, though.
Boswell is good for later.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's fair.
Hayward being credited for two pass breakups, but I'm going to tell you there was a third.
Oh.
That if you weren't watching on TV, you wouldn't have noticed. Teddy Bridgewater sidearmed a ball.
Ooh.
And it came through, and it grazed off the side of his arm. He will not get credit for that no matter what. He didn't hit it with his hand, but the side of his arm did hit it. It did change the angle.
If it hit him in the head, would he get it? Pass breakup? If it hit him in the head? Helmet?
Maybe.
I'm just curious. I just wanted to know.
That's just using your head, though.
Ah, fair enough.
But anyway,
big brain energy.
Big brain plays right there. But yeah, it could have been three pass breakups if you really wanted to give him credit. Just Cam's got a knack for it. He knows if he's not getting to the quarterback to read the quarterback's eyes, get his hands up, and break that pass up. And he did it twice in the game. Chris Wormley played a lot, but near the end of the game, it seemed as though he was losing some snaps to one Mr. Henry Mondo. Would you know why that might be?
It might be because he has a spin move from hell. I don't know. No. That stuff was too hot and fiery and just fierce.
Dwight Freeney ain't got nothing on Henry Mondo's spin move. I'm telling you what.
I wasn't ready for it.
I've been waiting for it for 2 years.
I know you have.
We saw this in the preseason, not last year, of course, because there wasn't one, but the year before, he hit the Carolina Panthers with that spin move.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, we might have something with this guy. And there you go. He actually did get interviewed, and he said that in film study, they noticed that the guards had a habit of oversetting. On that play, he noticed there was no running back, so he knew it was a pass play. So he knew he was 100% rushing the passer no matter what. And based off of how the offensive line was set up, he had a two-way go, which means he could go inside or outside depending on how the guard set up. He noticed him overset to the outside, so he hit him with the spin and went inside.
And he did his little, I don't even know what you call it.
Yeah, man, like a little rodeo.
It was a little rodeo.
Rodeo, like, salsa, everything.
What do they call them? When they hold the thing for the Bulls?
Yeah.
Because I saw TJ Watt and had an interview later as well.
Yeah.
And TJ was like, you know, I was supposed to run through it with the horns.
Was he?
He was. That's what he said.
No, this and
he
was like a dual thing.
Yeah. He was like, but I was just so excited for him that I just did it with him. That's what TJ said.
Oh, that's so funny. They had a sack
celebration. They had a sack celebration ready, and TJ messed it up because he was so happy for him.
Oh, that's hilarious, by the way. Could have had another sack in this game.
But he didn't.
We had one from Bush. We had one from Henry Mondo.
Yep.
We also technically had one from Isaiah Loudermilk, although there was a penalty on the play. They accepted the penalty instead of accepting the sack.
Correct, which I'm upset with.
So Loudermilk did not get his first sack of his career. That would have actually been his only statistic in the game, too.
It would have been his only one. So, other than snaps played. Yeah. Other than snaps played.
Yeah, but it was interesting to see, though, off of Mondo getting that sack and getting pressure a few other times, and honestly played up pretty strong against the run as well in this game. He started playing with Cam Hayward in pass rush situations.
Yep.
It was T.J. Watt, Alex Highsmith, Cam Hayward, and Henry Mondo. And I never thought I'd see the day.
Was applying pressure.
He was, man.
That's what we talked about. That's what we wanted.
That's what we've been looking for.
Love it. Moving to special teams.
Yeah, man.
Boss for president.
Boss for president, man.
2 for 2 on field goals, 3 for 3 on extra point. Both of his field goals coming from between 40 and 49 yards. Those aren't easy kicks at Heinz Field. No. We know that. And Boswell's doing a great job. I don't have much more to say about Bos unless you do.
No, man. Just a hell of a kicker.
Heck yeah.
Very glad to have him on the team. Presley Harvin III had his best game as a punter for the Steelers yet.
He did. It was fun to see him punt in person again. Yeah. We saw it in practice. And then seeing it in the game. It was really cool to see.
When he unleashed that 63-yard bomb.
That was coming right at me.
The announcers were like, holy cow. And the return man's just
I just saw the return
up.
Man running back. I was like, oh, yeah.
He got a hold of that one,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, he did.
So really impressive. Nice to see. A valuable seventh-round pick. Not too many times that you can say that. But a seventh-round pick that really is paying off for Pittsburgh. The return game, we didn't see anything too crazy out of anyone.
Nope.
So pretty status quo there.
Moving on to after the game. We talked about Juju's dislocated shoulder.
And we talked about Devin Bush's groin injury.
Najee Harris did suffer what we believe to be a calf injury during the game. Wound up just being cramps.
Yep.
Sad day. Could have had 150 yards. Whatever. But it's okay.
He had 142 all-purpose, so he's pretty close.
It's his best game as a pro so far.
Yeah.
And there will be better, and there will be much better. And that's okay. Next week, we have the Seattle Seahawks just coming off of a loss to none other than their divisional rival, Los Angeles Rams. And the big news here is no Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson suffered a injury to his middle finger, which left it looking more like a hook than a finger, and now will not be playing against us next Sunday night, which is sad for me because it would have been cool to see Russell play, but exciting for us as Steelers Nation because it hopefully improves our chances. We'll get to that a little bit later, but yeah.
I'm only sad for Noah, man.
That's true.
Your buddy Noah was so excited to see Russ play in person. Yep. And it's not going to happen.
I wonder if he's washed his hands since Eric Ebron touched it.
I hope so.
We'll find out.
Yeah.
But before we get too far into talking about the Seattle Seahawks, Steelers also made some roster changes after, very brief ones, small ones, after the game. They signed, they brought in wide receiver Anthony Miller with intent to sign him to the practice squad. Anthony Miller being a former 2018 second-round draft pick for, I believe, the Bears.
Yeah, Chicago Bears, man, a pretty highly sought-after guy. So this obviously is in reaction to the Juju injury, not knowing 100% yet, but the fear being that he may be out for the remainder of the season. You need more guys on the practice squad. This is a high-pedigree guy who you might even be able to bring up on game day and contribute pretty early on. Especially with some of the bumps and bruises from the other wide receivers. You're going to feel like Ray Ray's probably feeling a little beat up after pile driving himself into a defensive tackle this week. So.
Oh, yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see. But a high pedigree guy like that, you're going to got to be real excited about the possibility of him joining the team.
Yep. So now time to go over just briefly the Seattle Seahawks team and what it's looking like. So with Russell Wilson out, Geno Smith will get the start. Many people probably remember him playing for the Jets. That was the last team that I remember him playing for.
Yeah, he's been around, man.
He has. He's been around for a little bit. He's not any rookie or slump or anything like that. Wide receivers, they got obviously DK Metcalf as well as Tyler Lockett. Those are the two biggest guys, both literally and figuratively, on their team for sure at the wide receiver position. Fullback is Nick Ballor, fairly decent blocking fullback, probably one of the top five, I would say, in the NFL. My guess. And then running back Chris Carson, Chris Carson is a phenomenal running back.
Big, strong dude. These kinds of running backs have a habit of giving Pittsburgh problems sometimes. Although DK Metcalf is basically the size of a tight end.
Yeah.
And faster than anyone Pittsburgh has.
Yep.
So think Chase Claypool, but bigger. That's what DK Metcalf is.
Yep, that's basically what he is. Yep. Speaking of the like tight end size, their tight ends being Will Disley and Colby Parkinson, both can make impacts on games. Very similar to how we have Pat and Ebron. These guys are very, very similar in that case. And then you look at the offensive linemen. From left to right, you got Dwayne Brown, Damian Lewis, Kyle Fuller, Gabe Jackson, and Brandon Shell. None of those names super stick out to me, but they're also not a pushover offensive line either.
Yeah, and a couple years ago, we were looking at Damian Lewis in the draft. Was a highly sought-after guard out of LSU. Came out the same year as Lloyd Cushenberry, who we just played against with the Denver Broncos, their starting center.
Yeah.
So the two of them played side-by-side at LSU. So not a guy that you'd expect to push around easily. And Dwayne Brown, a pretty seriously talented left tackle there, too. So Alex Highsmith going to have his work cut out for him once again.
Absolutely.
Does not seem to be getting any cupcakes on the left side.
No, not at all. Moving to the defense, the edge rusher, you have Rasheem Green, and then you have Kerry Hyder Jr. as the defensive end, and then you have nose tackle, defensive tackle with Puna Ford and Al Woods. Not the best front by any means that we've gone up against, for sure.
No, some stout boys there, but not any names that you really fear as far as pass rushers. Now, a little different story when you get to the linebacking core. Bobby Wagner, known for being one of the most athletic, dangerous middle linebackers in the NFL. Jordan Brooks, former first-round pick himself. And then Benson Mayowa, which I'm not real familiar with him, I'm going to be honest with you.
No, and that's okay. And I want to point something out to you here that's a little interesting that I don't think you see often on NFL depth charts.
What's that?
Their backup middle linebacker is their fullback.
What?
Nick Bellore is also their active fullback.
That's weird, man.
Very weird.
So is he a linebacker or is he a fullback?
I don't know, but he's playing both.
Okay.
Is Henry Mondo a fullback or a defensive lineman?
Well, he's a defensive lineman.
But he plays both.
He did one time. secondary, Sidney Jones and DJ Reed are their starting corners. Safeties, you might have heard of both of them before, Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs. That's because both of them are highly talented. So these guys are not the super athlete types. Even Sidney Jones was not a super athlete coming out. But they are heavy hitters. They are physical guys. So definitely going to have their act together with that. Getting good releases off the line of scrimmage will be very important.
Yep.
But also using your athleticism to separate, because you really might be able to do it against these guys.
100%. And then you go to the special teams. We always talk about this. Kicker, Jason Myers, probably the best kicker we've gone up against, minus Justin Tucker. Not that we're actually going up against him. He might kick the ball once or twice. We'll see what happens. Michael Dixon, their punter, not a pushover punter by any means. He can get the ball up and keep it up pretty high. I think that's a lot of times how they can force some turnovers and stuff like that. And then Freddie Swain on the punt return and DJ Dallas on kick return. DJ Dallas being one, I think, their third string running back, if I'm not mistaken. And then Tyler Ott as the long snapper.
Got to talk about that long snapper, man.
I don't want to, but James likes it. So we always bring it up. We always bring it up.
You just never know when a long snapper is going to make a difference in a game.
That's fair. You don't.
Yeah.
I can tell you what long snapper made a difference in the playoff game last year.
Who's that?
Marquise Pouncey.
He's not a long snapper.
That first snap was real long.
Yeah, it was a long snap. You kind of got a point there. I'm going to give you credit on that one. So real important week coming up here against the Seattle Seahawks. Struggling team minus their starting quarterback. They're only 2-3 right now, coming off of a rough loss against the Rams, which probably kind of demoralized them a little bit, I'm going to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Losing your starting quarterback and going against a highly talented team like that, that's tough to do.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh got a real opportunity here. They get back the 3-3 before the bye, start getting some guys back from injured reserve, and maybe gain a little momentum going into the second part of the season here.
Yeah, for sure. But now it is time for our three keys to beating the Seahawks. James, you're first this week.
All right, man. So you won't be surprised by my first one, because I already talked about him a little bit more than most people on this team.
Okay.
Number one key, slow down DK Metcalf. Big man, very fast, very tall, in a deep threat extraordinaire. So make sure you know where he is. Make sure you have a safety that can help out your corner so that you don't end up in another position where James Pierre is covering him deep, because I don't like that matchup at all.
Nope, not at all.
Number two, always know where Bobby Wagner is. This is more a note for Ben Roethlisberger than anyone else.
That's fair enough. And Najee even a little bit.
Yeah, Najee also, because if Bobby's blitzing, you better know where he is to pick him up. But a very, very athletic and highly skilled middle linebacker. You need to know where he is in the passing game. You need to know where he is when you're running the ball. And kind of game plan around it, to be honest with you.
Fair enough.
So very important to be highly aware of him. Last one, pressure and sack Geno Smith. This is not a superstar quarterback. Don't let him look like it. Yep. If you apply lots of pressure, he will crack. He will make mistakes. You will get turnovers, and you'll make the game easy. But the easiest way to do that is apply lots of pressure. Seems like they're starting to heal up along this defensive front, getting more production out of secondary defensive linemen like your Henry Mondo and Isaiah Loudermilk. It was really nice to see both them get to the quarterback successfully in this game. A little more of that in this upcoming game, and you're going to start seeing more from your Cam Haywards and TJ Watts and Alex Highsmith once again, because they're going to have to pay more attention to these other guys.
Yep, 100%. So I'm going to start off right kind of where you left off. Mine's less of pressuring and sacking Geno Smith, more of just a broad statement of do not underestimate Geno Smith. Too many times in my experience watching the Pittsburgh Steelers, we go up against backup quarterbacks, even as recently as Robert Griffin III with Baltimore, and they destroy us. They absolutely destroy us. They make us look stupid. Don't underestimate Geno. He is still a fairly mobile quarterback, and he still has an arm. If he wasn't able to do the things, he wouldn't be a backup in the NFL. They would be signing somebody. They would be figuring something else out. Geno is very capable of destroying us if we underestimate him, because they still have a talented team around him currently. Second thing is going to be, I'm going back to my previous ways, we need to win the turnover battle. We cannot afford to lose the turnover battle. We can't. We can't do it. It drives me nuts whenever we do that and then we lose games. Got to force some turnovers on defense, especially when you're going up against a backup, like you said, fluster him, all that kind of stuff. And the last thing I'm going to say is spread the love. Ben needs to do the same thing he did this game. And if you go to somebody like Deontay once or twice and then they start locking him up, be comfortable enough and confident enough if in your other receivers, your tight ends, and Najee. Go other directions, spread the ball around, get a couple guys in the end zone for touchdowns, we'll be good to go. I don't want to see us come out and score 6 points and that be the end of it. Offense got to put up points.
Absolutely, I love it.
That's where I'm at.
Yeah, where I'm at also is don't forget that if you give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, we will read it on the show. And give you a shout out for doing so for us.
Absolutely.
Seems like there might be one coming through. We're starting to get some reports.
There might be. I talked to a guy at the Steelers game, and he said he might give us a review or might take a look at us and see what he thought. That might be him coming through, so we'll have to wait and see.
So we're going to have to wait one more week to actually see the review. But a rating has come through, and it's 5 stars.
Thank you very much. So, again, we can't thank you guys enough for listening. Be sure to like and follow on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok @SteelersByTheLake. And until next time, this is your host, James and Cody, signing off.
Peace.